A beacon shining in the night, faster than a bolt of light, cloaked but hiding in plain sight.
Their mission, to help the Green Arrow fight the darkness, corruption, and bring hope.
We are strong.
We are many.
We are the Arrow Squad.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Arrow Squad with Cammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
And listen to this, or my fictional alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
That's right, Arrow Squad. We are back. This is the Flash, and I've got Cammy here with me. Hi, Cammy.
Hi, Flash. It is good to be back on this, in America, Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving, and in Canada, it's a very cold day.
It is. We are sitting at just below minus 20 Celsius, which I think is around minus 4 Fahrenheit for you guys, so it is bitterly cold. And we also have Black Friday going on, too. We have now absorbed that sales event that you guys have down there, so it's a little bit crazy today.
It sounds like a crazy and cold day, but we are going to warm up with Arrow Squad episode 174, season 8, episode 6, entitled Reset.
Yeah, Reset. Now I understand exactly what that title meant.
Yeah, it was a time loop Groundhog Day episode, and it was directed by David Ramsey.
Yeah, I had no idea. I mean, they made so much hoopla about Katie Cassidy directing, and they just kept this one very quiet that David was directing, but I guess he's done it before, so.
He has, I think, directed before, and he does a really good job with his direction. I remember I don't remember what the episode was, but I remember at one point he had directed before, and we were commenting on enjoying sort of his approach to it. And I think he did an excellent job with what I would consider to be a pretty difficult episode to direct.
Yeah, one like this for sure. We also wanted to just remind everyone again about your Farewell to Arrow and Arrow Squad feedback. We've put a call out for some special feedback for our special episode we are going to do the week before the big finale next year. So you guys want to share your thoughts and feelings on what all of this has meant to you as a viewer and a listener, then we will include it on that special episode.
Thank you. Very excited for that. But before that, we have an episode from this week to discuss. Mm-hmm. And Flash, do you want to kick off our ratings?
I will. I am giving this one an 8 tearful farewells. Now, you know, this one was funny. And I don't mean humorous, as in it made me laugh, but funny in how it struck me. At first, when the reset started happening, And it happened a couple times, I actually was disappointed on my first time through. I immediately thought, Groundhog Day, here we go. Why are they doing this? Because it's often a cheap cop-out for lazy writers that have no new ideas for a show that's old and tired. And I'm wondering how many viewers felt that as well. But then, as Arrow did its own version of this idea, As the episode went on, it got better as it went. And then especially on the second viewing, once that initial reaction was gone and I knew it was coming and I could just enjoy it, I really enjoyed it and what they did with it. Just as each episode has allowed us to see old friends again, it's also allowed Oliver to say farewell to beloved characters that meant so much to the stories of the show. And this time it was Quentin Lance that got the spotlight, and I'm so glad that he did. He deserved a full episode just dedicated to him, as he and Oliver have so much history together. You know, it's such a nice tribute to Lance. And they were friends, they were enemies, they were friends again. There's so much there. And as we as viewers also get to say goodbye to Lance, so did Oliver. But what really brought this one home was another stellar performance by Stephen Amell. It brought tears to my eyes, not once, but twice. And I think that Stephen Amell should really get an Emmy nomination, at least, if not win an Emmy for this season.
I love hearing you so excited about this episode, because I was a little nervous when I started reading your notes and I saw that you weren't a fan of this Groundhog Day idea, but I'm happy to hear it won you over in the end. My rating's a little lower. I gave it a 7 out of 10. But I will say the episode felt really, really short to me. And that's always a good sign because it means we're left wanting more. I was fully immersed while watching. And I do agree that the Groundhog Day trope is often overused or misused to excuse odd plot holes or initiate a cheap wrap-up. I like the trope itself. I think it's fun. It's just not always applied well. Mm-hmm. In this case, I think it was done well. I just feel it was only done well for Oliver. In the current setup of the show, that's good enough. We only have 3 episodes left, and the clean wrap-up of Oliver's plotline is the top priority. So
yeah.
While I found myself disappointed in the trajectories for the other characters or sometimes lack of richness in their writing in this episode, I understand that they're not really the focus this late in the game, and it set up well for the crossover, which has Oliver poised for his fate, and it sets the expectation for me that going forward, while storylines for others may remain spinning, because they may also be in the future spinoff or show up there, the storyline for Oliver, I think, will conclude well, or at the very least, they're putting in the time and effort and episode screen time to make that happen.
Yeah, you know, you actually make a really good point there, Cammy, that if you step back and look at this episode, they focused so strongly on Oliver's story and plot for this episode, and everyone else kind of felt like we're not even sure what to write for them or what to make them do in this episode because we're just concentrating on Oliver so much. That really actually stands out now that I step back and look at it. So, yeah, good point there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a couple pieces of pre-show feedback before we dive further into our time loop episode.
Okay.
We have an email from our friend Dudu Kaisler. What does he have to say?
He says, "Hey, Martin and Camion, how are you?" Oh, Camion. Not many people call you Camion. That's fun.
Yeah, formal.
Half season is behind us, and I think we all can agree on that a shorter season is a benefit to everyone. The action never stops, and you can't get bored for 1 second, because always something important to plot is happening. Contrary to the current season of The Flash, for example. I so agree. But this is a conversation for another podcast. I'm very excited about the upcoming Crisis in 2 weeks. I found out it will be a 5-episode crossover, and the last one will take place in January 2020 at the opening seasons of Legends of Tomorrow. Brings to me a question to you. We assume that Oliver will die during the Crisis because the Monitor said so, but after that there are still 2 more final episodes of the season and series. Can it be that Oliver won't show up on those episodes? What do you think? And as usual, can't wait for the next episode. Bye for now. Dudu Kaisler. I was actually talking to a coworker about that today. I don't know if Oliver is for sure going to die in the Crisis because they have those 2 more episodes. So I can't see them having 2 episodes without him at all. Maybe he survives, but he has to hold up to the bargain he struck with the Monitor. And we did see Felicity. You remember the season finale last year?
Mm-hmm.
She walks off into a portal with the Monitor, and she says, "It's been a long time since I've seen him. I can't wait to be with him again." So that tells me Oliver isn't dead. Wherever they're going, maybe he's in some type of other realm or dimension or something, you know, in between worlds, in between life and death, and she can go join him there. Maybe she's sacrificing herself to be with him. I don't know. Or I guess they could kill him in the Crisis, and then the last 2 episodes have flashbacks and all our other characters, you know, doing a funeral, saying their goodbyes or whatever. I don't know. The thing is, Felicity is supposed to be in the finale. So if she's there, you know Oliver's going to be there.
Of course.
Yeah. That's why I think he's something's going to happen in the Crisis, but he'll survive, and he then has to go off to finish his bargain with the Monitor. Unless he suffers an injury that takes the next 2 episodes to finally do him in, and that's when everybody gets to say goodbye to him.
That would be really hard to see, though, a drawn-out death over the course of a couple episodes.
Yeah.
It's possible. That would be rough.
Possible. This is just what we were talking about today, because, yeah, it's tough. I mean, Dudu is right. There is 2 more episodes. It's just speculation that he's supposed to die in the Crisis. So, you know, hard to say.
I think what we might see would be piecing together moments from different times, maybe different Olivers as well. And the wrap up in the final two episodes may involve some past, present, and future pieces, such that if Oliver, the Oliver we know, does physically die in the crossover, we would see an episode that may involve an entirely different time, so future only, with the future trio, and they're carrying out Oliver's mission in some way, or past Oliver, maybe an episode that is fully flashback, and then the finale may have him return. I think that the second to last episode, the one that directly follows the crossover, hopefully this isn't a spoiler, this is just sort of general format. I have heard speculation that it will be a very different format than the rest of the show, that it may not directly follow the crossover in the same way.
Yeah, and I mean, you could be right. The very last one could be a lot of flashbacks wrapping up or showing us the best parts of Arrow and Oliver Queen throughout its 8-season run, which would really be tear-jerking moments for sure if they're showing us a lot of emotion, emotional scenes and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it's good though. I'm glad that we don't know, because you've heard me complain how much they've spoiled the crisis already too much. I'm glad we know nothing about how Arrow is going to end. I want it to be shocking. I want it to be emotional. I want it to gut punch me. And so I'm, you know, completely unprepared for any of it. I'm not looking forward to it ending, but I'm looking forward to not knowing how it's ending.
Yes, it will be fun.
Yeah.
I have an email here from Erin, our friend, and she also is looking forward to the crossover and also has some comments about last week's episode. Looking back, she points out that she would have enjoyed Anatoly more had they not messed him up in season 5, but she totally agrees that it was a good episode. She also agrees with us that she would have liked to see Lila be a part of the mission instead of Siren, thus having them deal with her double crossing in a little bit different way. She says Oliver is too worried about the kids and Lila could kind of bring him around on that. She also says, I know Martin loved Roy being back, but her favorite part was probably Mia saying that Nyssa trained her so she could handle herself. So that is her favorite moment from last week's episode.
Nice.
She says, I'm still bummed that there is such a difference between Mia of last season and Mia of this season. She says, again, they had started where they're making mistakes, but kind of lucking into winning battles last season because of backup or something that would make sense for her to need Oliver's help with training. But now, while she has access to him, she seemed competent previously, and her needing training now doesn't work for her. So that is a fair point. They have changed Mia's skill level a lot. She says that with antiheroes on Arrow, you have to have antiheroes before they can never die. She says that Arrow hasn't really had any true antiheroes. This is following a comment I made last week about antiheroes on Arrow never really dying. She says she is still bitter over Black Siren, but she hopes Zoe is in the spinoff. She agrees with our little rabbit trail last week about them being a little bit too hard on Dinah and a little bit too easy on Renee. And she has some thoughts at the end of this, specifically about Supergirl. She also has some thoughts in there about Flash and Legends. So if you're curious about our friend Erin's thoughts on those three shows, you can read her comments on our blog post.
Yes, and thanks as always, Erin. It's interesting, just to touch on one thing, you're talking about Dinah and Renee. I find it interesting that they are hardly in this final season at all. We're 6 episodes in and we have barely seen them. Like, not even much more than a cameo, really. So I'm wondering if they're going to be a little more as the show wraps up, or even in the crisis, how big of a part are they playing in that? I don't know, but I mean, we know Dinah's going to be around, so that's okay. She's continuing on in that show, but Renee, we have no idea about. So you would think, I don't know. I guess because they've been the main characters for the last couple of seasons, they'd be a little bigger part of Oliver traveling through his final story. They'd be there with them, but yeah, they really haven't been.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not the hugest fan of NTA, right? This sort of new Team Arrow dynamic, but they're not really new anymore. And I have to admit, in this last episode, and we'll get into this more in the discussion points, I think I would have preferred to see Oliver with that team rather than his team up with Siren. I think if he had maybe been in the loop by himself, but had to team up a bit more with Dinah and Renee, we could have gotten just a bit more of a Team Arrow dynamic in an episode that was otherwise kind of free of Team Arrow. That said, Oliver and Diggle's team up was still my favorite moment in this.
Right.
Anyways, we'll get into that in the discussion points.
But well, we have favorite moments. Yeah.
Yeah. Jinx.
We do. Yeah. You owe me a Coke.
I do.
Isn't that how it goes? Yes, we got some favorite moments. Let's get into those. All right. This show is ending, so we've got a couple favorite moments here. I'm stringing together some of Quentin's best parts from this episode, simply because we are bidding farewell to a long beloved character that's been with us from the beginning. I'm kind of going in order because I notice his character evolving through this storyline. And the first one is when him and Oliver first get together and talk, and Oliver's explaining like, hey, I'm in a time loop and, you know, this is happening and I have to save you. And Quentin's like, okay, sure. And just Oliver's reaction, wait, what, you believe me? Just it's what Quentin responds to with that just cracked me up. And it's perfect Oliver Quentin dynamic. So here's that first clip.
You steal a copy of my speech or something? We've had this exact conversation already. What are you talking about? Fully aware of how this is going to sound. Quentin, I'm trapped in some sort of time loop where the same events just keep repeating themselves. Like Groundhog Day. Sure, except this one ends in a lot of people dead, including the two of us. Okay. How can I help? Do you actually believe me? Oliver, I've seen one daughter die and come back to life twice. I've seen another come from some other Earth. I've seen a guy in red run so fast he can reverse time. This is not exactly outside the norm, is it? Also, I'm done learning my lesson about Downey because that always bites me in the ass.
That's just perfect Quentin. I like that he just acknowledges, oh, you know what? Nothing's too strange for me anymore.
And it's a nice setup to how at the end of the episode he is very resigned to very big things. We see that foreshadowed in him being resigned to small things.
Exactly, which is leading into these next two clips I have. Now the second one is Laurel getting to say goodbye to him. Well, maybe a little bit before that. This is when she's letting him know that he never actually survives the gunshot from Diaz, and he's okay with it. And this leads into what you were saying. He already is starting to realize that, you know what, I've been cheating death, and I never felt right about that one. So,
what is it? What's that look?
It's just that in my world, or in the real world, you're not mayor anymore.
Really? Pollard, she always had it in for me. There's something else? Laurel, sweetheart, I always know when you're hiding something from me. Please tell me, what is it?
It's a year and a half ago when he shot you in the real reality or whatever. You didn't exactly,
I didn't recover.
No. No, you died. To save me.
best way I could have gone.
What? I'm sorry. I basically just told you you're a ghost and you're completely okay with that. It doesn't faze you. You're completely calm.
I always felt like I cheated death with that one. Guess that's because I didn't. Fate's just tricky like that.
There. Exactly what you were saying, Cammy. He's starting to resign to the fact that, you know, he realizes he's not supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a small thing, but it's so good to hear his voice back on this episode. He has a very unique presence within Arrow, and it's been around for so long that it brings in automatic nostalgia, even when it's a not so real version of him in a time loop.
Yeah, and I actually like what you just said there, because I had that in my notes, so I was going to bring it up later, but since you said it, I'm going to say it now. It's... First of all, him being the mayor, he always should have been the mayor. I always thought that was the path for him to take. But just having him back, like you were saying, it really ties this season to all of the history with him on the show, because he's been there. He's witnessed everything that's ever happened with our characters, with our storylines. And this, just having him back, ties all of that back and brings that nostalgic feeling and makes us remember, oh yeah, Quentin has been through so much. He hasn't just been a side character. He's been probably the strongest supporting character on this show, whether he's dealing with Oliver or he's dealing with Laurel or even Sarah. He's been such a strong presence, and this just really brought all of that back, all of that history. And yeah, it's just absolutely fantastic. But that leads into my last clip of Quentin. This one just blew me away. This is when he's telling Oliver to make peace with having to let him go, when they're at the end of that firefight, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. But Quentin's just realizing this is the only way to move on, is that he has to just let him die and be okay with it. And Oliver's not quite ready yet to accept it. So here's that scene.
We are going to find a way out of this. There has to be a way to fix it, and we are going to find it, Quentin. It doesn't matter how many times, we're going to find it.
Yeah, sure. What's it going to be? 60 times? 100 times?
It's going to be however many times it takes.
You know, getting hunted like this, in a space like this, is kind of like what I was doing to you all those years ago. Remember? Oh, Timmer, make it think about like this now, don't you think?
Please just save your strength.
For what? Oliver, you take care of these guys. There'll be more behind them. There will be more behind them. There is no saving me from this. Okay? You ever think that's the point? Maybe you're not supposed to.
I'm not giving up. And you're not giving up either.
No, I'm not giving up. Maybe I'm giving in. You see, I've been outrunning death for a while now. Siege, the island. But when Diaz shot me, I felt different. Like I was finally at the end. And I made my peace with that. And maybe it's time you did too. It looks like fate's knocking. You just get ready to move. I'll see you on the other side, Oliver.
Oh my God, that music needs to win an award of some kind. That brought me to tears again just listening to it.
So good, and I completely agree with the music in particular. These last few episodes have been very well scored.
Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. Just like gut-wrenching beauty in the sound of it. And that scene is just, it's such a powerful scene because Oliver just can't let go yet. And Quentin is realizing what needs to be done. And again, he just keeps bringing up, I'm not supposed to be here. I cheated death and I need to be at peace with it. And so do you. And it's amazing the lessons that Oliver is having to learn here. These episodes are not, there's no missions. Forget about the missions. Forget about the tasks that the monitor is laying down on him. It's Oliver has to learn to let go. He has to learn to forgive, and he has to learn to accept things that have happened, whether it's past, present, or the what's coming in the near future. That's what this season is all about. The monitor is allowing him to leave his life with no regrets. And it's kind of like a reward for his sacrifice. And it's just, it's beautiful. As sad and depressing as it is, it's actually really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. In contrast to the last clip you played, which had that beautiful score that we were referencing, you see in the clip that I chose for my favorite moment, a start of what I'll refer to as minimalism in the audio, and then it kind of builds the emotion in their voices as well as the background score. So I'll let that play. It's a little bit longer than what I normally select, and then we'll talk through it.
But I love it. Here it is.
Congratulations, Oliver. Now you understand.
I couldn't change Quentin's fate. I can't change mine either, can I?
No. I'm sorry.
Why did the monitor go to all of this trouble just to prove a point?
You've always been a man who needed to see things for himself. Telling you wouldn't have been enough.
How long have you worked for him?
A while.
You lied to us, Lila, you. You lied to John.
Keeping this from John has been the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
Then why do it?
The same reason you left Felicity and Mia in that cabin. To protect my family.
Do you honestly believe that working with the monitor is the best way to do that?
It's the only way. The crisis is coming. There is no stopping it. All we can do is try to survive it.
Okay, help me out here, Lila. I don't even know what it is.
I know. But you will. Soon. What I can tell you is there is an evil coming that is greater than anything we've ever had to face.
Can we stop it?
I don't know. But you are the only chance we have.
So everything I've done, from the moment I left that cabin, this has all been some bigger part of a test.
He needed to be sure you were ready.
He's just been sending me on useless missions.
They weren't useless. The dwarf star particles, Dr. Wong, even the antimatter weapon, they all have a purpose. Just not the one you were expecting.
Why did he involve my children?
Time is a gift. You complete your final mission. I'll see you there.
The ending really is so climactic, yeah. But their voices still stay quite calm throughout. They build in emotion only, but they don't build in volume. It's very interesting to listen to. It was very interesting to watch as well. The scene itself is quite minimal in that there's not heavy gestures. The background is not constantly moving. The camera angles move pretty slowly and it flips back and forth between the two of them pretty minimally. But it's such a key scene in the episode and also in this season. It reveals things that in a show that often has characters keeping secrets or not communicating, it reveals things very openly and honestly and quickly. It makes the scene pretty stunning to watch. And I'll say Lila, Audrey, is played beautifully in this scene. I know this episode is really all about Oliver, but she counterbalances him really perfectly. And there's this feeling of foreboding of bad or evil or death approaching that's there in the calmness in what she's saying. So I find this very ominous, but a beautiful scene.
Yeah, but yeah, you know what I picked up in her voice, though? She's actually very compassionate towards Oliver in this. She understands what he's going through, what he's sacrificing, and mm-hmm. and his the trouble in understanding it all. And just her voice is very compassionate towards him. And, mm-hmm. you know, and he's, at this point, he is getting it and he's listening and he understands, I have no choice. There's nothing I can do to change this. Okay, let's finish it properly. And it's, and what I love, where I kind of got some enjoyment in a chuckling way out of that scene is he's asking the very questions that I'm sure so many viewers were asking, like, what did all those missions mean? And didn't that matter for anything? And all like he's asking all the frustration questions that probably a lot of fans are, you know, going, why? And I just love that he actually asks them and, you know, she gives an answer. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's all about he's trying to learn the lessons. He just doesn't know what the lessons are. Mm-hmm. That leads perfectly into our first discussion question. This is a Groundhog Day plot, and there were lessons to be learned in order to break out of it for Oliver and the team. And for Siren, the lesson was just that she's a hero. But for Oliver, it is a bit more complicated and it is a bit more extensive. My question for you is, how would you define what he learned?
Well, one of the first notes I wrote for this episode is early on, you could see how frustrated he was with everybody. And he's trying to get answers. He's trying to figure things out. And everybody keeps sidestepping his questions. Mm-hmm. And he's clearly frustrated. And me, even as a viewer, as I've been saying for these last couple seasons now, I am Oliver's partner. I'm at his side through thick and thin, no matter what. I felt frustrated for him. And I wanted to smack everybody. You know, wake him up a little bit. Like, give me some answers, would you? Like, you guys are just, you're brushing me aside and I don't appreciate it. And I think, yeah, I think, how do you even put into words how, defining what he learned? I think I said it earlier, is he's just having to come to terms with the fact that there's some things he can't change. And he has to be okay mm-hmm. with that. He has to be able to accept it. He has to not carry it with him and have this dark cloud over him for so long, because that's what ends up affecting his other relationships and his focus and everything. He needs to be able to see clearly, and he needs to shed some of these things that he carries that aren't necessarily his fault or are his burdens to carry. So that's what I think he really pulled from this episode. And like I said in my opening monologue, I think on the second watching, all of that really, really stood out to me and struck me like a hammer on an anvil. Like, wow, okay, I get what Oliver's going through and what it is the monitor's trying to teach him. And exactly at the same time that he finally realized it. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something about what Oliver has to be resigned to has this dichotomy between elevating his self-perception and also humbling him. On the one hand, he has to see himself as instrumental in this plan, but he also has to be humbled to where he sees himself as nothing in comparison to fate.
Right.
That fate overrides him, is more important than him, and will win in the end. I think both of those things are a struggle for Oliver. He sees himself as not above others. He's frequently willing to sacrifice himself for others. But at the same time, he is far too stubborn to just give in to fate and not fight it. Yeah. So I think that's why both of those two things become such sticking points for him. But ultimately, this is a setup for his eventual fate in Crisis. And I know we have our widespread suspicions of what that fate may be, but Do you think that's what this lesson is really leading to? A setup for his death or other fate?
Well, yeah, I think from one perspective it is leading to that. But I think it's preparing him to be okay with it, like we keep touching back on. It's preparing him to be able to finish the task, to be able to fight this final fight and be okay with how it turns out. It's, yeah, and I'm wondering if the monitor already knows how it turns out. He just has to set everything in motion to get it to that point. I'm still unsure of how far into the future the monitor can see, if at all. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably preparing us as well. I mean, put aside the fans that gave up on the show, oh, Arrow's done and it should have ended season ago, whatever. Put those guys aside. Us true hard diehard fans that have been here and will not give up on the show, I think it's also preparing us that it's okay to say goodbye and, you know, put our minds at ease too, even though we don't really want to. Maybe Oliver's a little farther along that line than I am, but I think it's trying to do a couple things: prepare the viewers, prepare Oliver, and maybe even the writers preparing Stephen Amell, because you see the emotion that he is going through. Like I've said a couple times, he is really feeling these scenes, and that is not acting. That is true emotion coming out of him.
Yeah. I want to touch on Quentin as well in this particular episode. You've mentioned how instrumental he's been, and he's always been a bit of a father mentor figure to Oliver, and this is no exception. He serves as this metaphorical bridge between life and death, or if we're not so sure if Oliver's going to die, between life and whatever Oliver has to do next. He's preparing Oliver for that crossing. And that led me to think about all of the villains and mentors and locations and so on that Oliver has visited so far this season in his trip around the world before death, if you will. Mm-hmm. What do you think he has left to go through this season? Do you think Quentin was the final one?
I wouldn't say so, because he's got one more final mission according to the monitor. So we're unsure what that is. He ended up on Leah and you with his kids and Connor, which I find very strange. Why are they all there? So we have to try to figure out what's the final lesson that the monitor is trying to teach him, because he's bringing him back to the beginning. So this is wrapping it all the way up, full circle. And this could be where Slade comes in. I'm hoping it's where Slade comes in. There's something there. Maybe his dad comes back for a visit. It is really hard to say. Again, this is great that I don't know what's coming, because it could throw a few things at us. But you know what? Quentin not being the last, I don't think he's the last one. Quentin, you worded it perfectly here. He was helping Oliver see that it's okay to move on and it's okay to accept it. I think he provided that reassurance that you're going to be okay. Even if you have to pass on, you will be okay, and everyone you leave behind will be okay. I think that's what Quentin was providing for him, because Quentin, as you said, has always been kind of a father figure, which Oliver has not had for quite a few seasons. So Quentin stepping into that role, I think, gave the perfect fatherly type of advice that Oliver needed at that moment for him to be able to see Lila and be able to be so accepting and moving on and just say, all right. Because the way it transitions after your favorite clip there, to him and Laurel waking up in that army tent, whatever that was, he's already okay with everything. And he's like, all right, well, we've got a final mission. Let's go figure out what it is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I see Quentin as helping Oliver approach this last mission. Yeah. And then he'll probably have to come in contact with you and I both hope it's Slade, but something like that in Leon Yu. But then, following that final mission, the crossover, there'll be him having to cross over to something else. So my theory, just putting this out there, recall that when we see flashback Felicity, and I mean the real flashback Felicity, not present day, but back when she was a hacker,
Right.
They changed her comic book character just a bit. So she's called Felicity Smoke. That's Ronnie Raymond's stepmother, right? And they give her elements of that character. She's a businesswoman, all of that. But when we see the flashback version of her, they have her styled as Sin from the Sandman comics. She's a carbon copy of it, if you will. Hmm. And the point of that character is, in the comics, is to help people cross between life and death. And what they were insinuating in the flashbacks by having her styled as that character is that Felicity, at that point, was helping Oliver return back to life. He had been, quote-unquote, dead on the island, Leon Yu. And while he was coming back to life, he had to learn how to really become alive again. And that was the motif that they gave her character. I'm wondering if her return in the final episode will be the last sort of figure walking alongside him in this journey. And if he is going to die, if it's actually Felicity who comes alongside him and helps him then walk from life to death, as is her alternate comic book character's job.
Do you think she would go with him, though?
I think she would. I think so. And I think that would be sort of... because it could be not a literal death. It could be them crossing over into another universe or into the Monitor's void or something like that. And when we last saw her, she was more than willing to go with him to whatever that was. She had already raised her kids. Yeah. She had already saved the world a few times. I think that's what we may see, is the two of them walking together into something maybe a little more peaceful than death.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're going to have to, because we saw her walk off with the Monitor, thus ending her story, we're going to have to see, like, in what form does she come back? Does she come back previous to that happening, and then we go back to that scene again where she disappears, or does he bring her back from wherever it was she went to? Like, that I think that is a bit of a something they have to fix, because she clearly walked out and was gone.
She did, but that was in the future. And now we've established that the future may have changed.
That's true. So you're right.
She's maybe older. That scene has changed.
Yes, you're right. You're right. That was when the older version of her in the future. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right.
Okay, it may not have changed, but they have a little bit of creative freedom with that, I think.
Right. Cool.
Well. Go ahead.
Sorry, I've got a couple fun points because I was looking ahead at your notes here. I want to squeeze these in now just to get your reaction to them and your quick thoughts on them. A couple fun points I pulled out of this episode. There was a moment early on when Quentin was when they found out they have to go to the police station and save the hostage situation and stuff. And, you know, he goes to Oliver, you're going to need a change of clothes. I have a feeling we need the green guy. And I don't know why. I thought of the Incredible Hulk, because he's known as the big green guy.
Oh, yeah.
So it just made me laugh at their kind of... And I find the DC shows often make reference to Marvel characters as a fun thing. Like, it's like our DC universe is alive and well, and they read Marvel comics as well. That's kind of how they do it. So that just made me laugh. And I wanted to ask you something. Did you notice there was three times in this episode, we got a very good close-up of Oliver and his bow, and his bow looked golden. Has he always had a gold bow?
I have never noticed him having a gold bow. It always, the metal part of it was a very dark metal.
It's really gold in this episode. I don't know if that's a new bow or what, but if you didn't notice it, go back and look at a couple of the scenes where they zoom up on him as he's pulling back on the string to fire an arrow. It's a gold bow, top to bottom.
Huh. I'm gonna have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, interesting. So I wonder if anyone has anything about that. It, you know, something that I missed. Mm-hmm. Now another funny scene. This is having Katie Cassidy and Stephen Amell having worked together for a long, long time. There was just a fun little moment when he first runs into her in the basement of the police station, and she's trying to explain to him everything that's going on. And he's like, yeah, me too. It's happening to me. And she's like, what? You believe me? And he just the way he shrugs, you know, she goes, well, I can't tell you everything. You're not going to believe me. You never believe me. And he just shrugs like, tell me anyway. 'Cause, and it, it's a funny, it's, there's no dialogue. It's just funny body language between the two of them. And it's a comical moment for Oliver, which kind of touches on the lighter side of him from the comics, because he's a little bit of a joker in the comics, and a lot of fans have been waiting for him to bring that out in this TV show. And that, to me, was just a very fine little touch. Just his body language kind of had that sense of humor to it. So I had a good chuckle there. Now, did you notice that Dinah used some type of Canary Cry wristband?
I did not notice that.
She, when her and Laurel were trying to figure out how to stop the bomb, she says, wait a second, I got something. She pulls up her sleeve and twists an armband on her arm, and it shoots out a Canary Cry, which cracks the face of the bomb. So,
you know, I noticed her using the Canary Cry. I didn't see that it was coming from her arm.
Mm-hmm. So what does what does that mean? Does that mean it, since her throat slit, she no longer can cry? Because we always wondered about that in all the future flash forwards. We never saw her Canary Cry, so we had no idea. Now she's got a device that does it. And no explanation.
I wonder if they're taking more of that techie route then with her. If so, it could become set up for her to have multiple types of cries.
Yeah, maybe.
Similar to how Oliver has different arrows that he can use. If her cry is a tech cry now, it could be that she could use it to create a force shield or blast something away from her to injure, as it normally does, and, you know, cause people temporary hearing loss or any number of things, mess with radio waves, send signals.
Yeah, maybe it's frequencies, because the way she twists it, maybe she can twist it to different frequencies that do different things. So I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, because there's no explanation. We've never seen it before, and she just does it in such a quick moment, and you're like, wait, wait a second. What did she just do? So interesting. Now, the last little point, I just had fun with this episode. They were really shouting out to the real world. They had three mentions. You know, the Groundhog Day was the obvious one. A couple times it came up with the Tom Cruise movie Edge of Tomorrow, which, if no one has seen that movie, it is one of his best. It's an absolutely fascinating Groundhog Day type sci-fi adventure about aliens attacking, and Tom Cruise has to keep reliving the same day over and over and constantly dying until he figures out how to stop them. It's amazing. It's Tom Cruise like you haven't seen before. And Emily Blunt, she is, oh my God, she's hard as nails. Awesome action hero on that. Have you seen it, Cammy?
I'm not sure that I have, actually. I feel like I've seen clips of it, but I'm not sure I actually saw the whole thing ever.
Well, it's good. This episode totally ties into it, so it's a lot of fun, because Oliver was dying and so was Tom Cruise. It was good. And then there was a Dr. Phil reference in here too, so they're just really calling on a lot of real world stuff, as if these characters are alive in our world and they're watching the same TV shows and movies. I get a kick out of that kind of stuff.
Well, we've talked about the good guys quite a bit, and I think we need to dive into the villains, don't you?
Oh, well, I think I know that you want to.
I do. And leading that, of course, is Lila. Lila is back with the team in some iterations of our time loops, and she's claiming at some points to be a double agent with the Monitor. What do you think of the morals of her character right now?
Yeah, interesting question. It's interesting you put her in the villain category here, because is she really a villain? She's been Diggle's wife. She's been the head of Argus. She's helped our team out on so many occasions. She's not a villain, but yet we find out that all along she's been working with the Monitor. And she's doing it because she thinks the ultimate goal is to save Earth and as many people as you possibly can from this event that's coming to destroy everything. So she thinks she's doing the right thing. But isn't that always the story of the greatest villains? They think they're doing the right thing. They don't see themselves as villains. They don't think of themselves as bad guys because they think they're doing the right thing as well. So how do you apply that to Lila? Is she really a villain?
I don't think she thinks she's doing the right thing. I think she thinks she's doing the only available option.
Okay, there's that's a different points, way to look at it.
Yeah, and there's points. Obviously, I put her in the villain category because I'll liken her behavior to villainy. However, there's points where she makes it pretty clear that she'd rather not be doing bad things. She'd rather not be working behind their backs with the monitor or the anti-monitor or whatever. But it's the only option available to her, and she's resigned to fate. She does not see herself as being above fate. She sees herself as an executor of fate in a way. So she's resigned to it in a way that Oliver has not necessarily. But aside from that, they do share many missions and sort of mission parameters in common. Do you see them as ethical opposites at this point?
Yeah, you know, that's a good way to put it. Because Oliver is, up to a certain point in this episode, and for this whole season, he is fighting fate. He thinks he can change it. He thinks he can alter the course of the future. And he has to learn that he can't, at least with his own fate and some other people's fates. Whereas Lila, she's resigned, as you said, to just accept it, that there's nothing you can do and there is only one course of action to take. And it doesn't matter if it hurts people. It doesn't matter if it kills people. It doesn't matter if she's lying to everyone she cares about. This is the only option. Whereas Oliver is trying to let everybody know what's going on. He's trying to include everybody. He's trying to save everybody. So yeah, I think at this point in time, they are very opposite.
Yeah, I think they're being set up to be foils for each other, the foils in the, you know, sort of archetype sense. But then in the clip that I chose as my favorite moment earlier, there's just so much that they have in common that it's difficult to see them as opposites.
Yeah.
Lila has been forced to do bad things in ways that Oliver has at times been forced to do bad things. And they both made these choices to protect their family. It's a very interesting dichotomy. They're not obvious opposites. And she, in that clip, she compares their path and she says, you know, they both did this to protect their family. It makes me think that she is still trying to be seen as redeemable while not trying to change her courses of action. She wants them to understand what she's doing. She's just not going to stop. Do you see Lila as redeemable or her relationships with them as repairable?
I think so. This is such a fine line to be treading here because it still falls back on your previous questions. Is she evil? Is she opposite of Oliver at this point? Well, no. I mean, she's still trying to save people the only way that she thinks she can. So I think she's redeemable. I think she can. I mean, this episode, if you look at the way it ended, the things that she was saying, because she showed up a couple times, like she showed up that one time in the bunker to kind of help steer him in the right way, and then she disappears. So she's stepping in to help him when she can. So she's maybe starting to see a little bit of Oliver's side as well and realizes that she's not completely helpless and everything is not completely set in stone. She can step in and maybe not completely alter the course of something, but maybe veer it off course just a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And she is kind of, as Oliver is also resigning himself to fate, or at least seeming to, she is likewise being willing to push against it alongside Oliver. She feels it's possible. There may be a happy medium that they'll find at the same time. Completely agree with you that she's redeemable. I don't even necessarily see her as a bad person. I see her as doing bad things, so temporarily filed under my villain category. One person who does not seem to share that opinion is Siren. We have Siren and Lila set up to be kind of paired foes. Do you like that dynamic?
Well, that's been kind of going on for the last couple episodes. As Siren's trying to find her way to being a hero, she's struggling with what she sees Lila doing because it's countering what she's trying not to do anymore. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of funny to watch. Now, I think this was Siren's final journey into being a hero. Those moments with Lance where he tells her, you know, baby girl, you are a hero. And she says, thanks. I really need to hear that. I think that was her final step. There is no longer any moments where she's going to question it or waver. She's going to live up to what, you know, Lance perceives her as, and she doesn't want to let him down. So I think that's the end for her. Now, if Lila ends up swinging to the other side for a little bit, if it means that she thinks doing a few more bad things to stop this crisis event is in order, and then Siren will probably stand against that, is what I can imagine. So yeah, it's a fun dynamic. I don't think I want it to be a main focus or anything, but.
I was so disappointed with the Siren and Lila pair up in this episode. There was one line in particular when Siren is walking away and she had just threatened Lila. And she says, and by the way, I pull off the short hair way better than you do. And I my jaw just dropped. I cannot believe a line like that made it onto television. Like, it's 2019. I would be totally fine with Siren and Lila in hand-to-hand combat, totally opposites, you know, fighting for whatever, trying to kill each other. But you have this, you have the entire world at stake, and you're insulting somebody's hair.
Yeah,
it's mind-boggling to me. I refuse to believe a woman wrote that. Or anyways, that was so disappointing. Their general pair up of being foes is very disappointing, because someone pointed out recently us on Twitter that it was actually Lila who had Siren's back early on, supported her, talked her down when she was trying to kill innocent people in just the season. And now she's suddenly above Lila, judging and insulting her for making tough choices. This was set up so well to where the two of them would be able to understand each other, and Siren would be able to pull Lila out of this, understanding what's leading her this direction, having been in a dark space herself, having been willing to do bad things herself. She pulled a gun on that computer person and was completely willing to kill him. It's hypocritical in a way that it doesn't have to be. Siren does not have to be a self-righteous, hypocritical character. She could be a fun, cool anti-hero, now turned total hero, who still understands where anti-heroes and potential villainesses are coming from. And it is so disappointing to see her go this way. And I hope whoever allowed that hairline to make it into this episode has a good long think next time they are writing lines like that. That was horrific.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is, well said, Cammy. You know what? That line was so bad that I forgot all about it. So, yeah, I agree with you there for sure.
Yes. Well, I will also say our friend Kevin and I had a chat about this, and he said that we needed a salty Cammy moment on tonight's podcast about it. So, Kevin, the salty Cammy moment is for you. Here's to better villainesses, anti-heroines, and heroines in next week's episode.
Yes. Well, let me lighten up with one more fun point here. I loved the couple trick arrows that he had in this episode. It was fun. We saw some different ones that we hadn't seen before. Like that one he shoots out with the four little blue discs that land, that magnetically fly to all the guns on those guards or security people, and it blows up their guns in their hands. Really neat. We've never seen that arrow before. And just something we should touch on is that entire final scene or sequence with Oliver and Lance, when they're going through that warehouse building and there's just soldier after soldier coming after them, and they're seemingly outnumbered constantly. As a filmmaker, I was so impressed with that scene, and I totally give credit to David Ramsey, because that was one continuous action shot from start to finish for 5 or 6 minutes long until he got to the scene where we played my final clip. It was continuous. There was one cameraman following them around. It was continuous and fluid action, and it was phenomenal. If you didn't pick up on it, go back and watch that action scene. It's nonstop, one complete fluid motion with one camera, and it was fantastic. Absolutely well done. I mean, that they had to execute that perfectly on one shot, or there's a lot of reset up that they have to do to get everything, because of all the glass breaking and the gunshot, everything that's happening. It's just beautiful. Really well done.
Yeah, impressive. I think the action in this episode in general was pretty impressive, and it would be hard to do given how much of it was repetitive with the whole time loop setup. So to keep it kind of varied and interesting was quite a challenge, I imagine.
Yeah. All right, one final segment, eh?
Yes, the final mission, Leon Yu. Just a couple quick questions looking forward. We see Oliver and his family are on what may be our final location outside of the crossover, the island. I know you and I have already speculated about whether or not they'll face Slade, but if Oliver has learned all the lessons he needs, do you think we're ramping up to mostly just action and final moments in these last three episodes?
Yeah, I still think there's a little bit more for him to learn. Each mission has taught him something. And Lila said, get ready for your final mission. So there's probably one big doozy of a lesson to be learned. Now, Slade would be the perfect final historical character to bring back here. But he also had a very emotional history with Shadow from the island. So maybe she'll come back as well. What's that?
I would like that. I liked her.
And what was the original guy before Shadow, before Slade, the original long-haired guy that first started teaching him how to survive? What was his name?
Yao something.
Yeah, it'd be neat to see him again, but I don't think he has as much emotional impact on this show as the other two did. So I think Slade and Shadow would be a 1-2 punch that would really end these learning moments with a tug on the heartstrings that unlike anything we felt yet this season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be it. And Shadow was also brought back in some dream sequences later in the show. So it would be cool if she continued to kind of return.
Yeah.
And I will say that final cut where it's just Oliver saying that this is Leon Yu, it shows Oliver and Mia. That's who's in frame when he's saying where they are.
Right.
Do you think this may be signaling that this is an island for her too? Island in the way that a lot of our heroes had to face an island before they became a hero.
I don't know if that will be for her, because I think these islands that are, you know, individual in quotations islands, they've all been very different. It's been based on what they're struggling with and what their history has been made of. So this is Oliver's island, and I think having his kids there maybe gives them the final bit of understanding to know their father and what he went through before he goes, because they're both kids. Like, they're getting a lot of daddy time as adults right now to fully be able to understand who he was and what he went through and why he made the decisions he did to protect them, all the things that they're frustrated and upset with him about. This is allowing them to just understand him. So I think getting to see the island and where it all began and the 5 years that he had to survive there, even though he wasn't there fully 5 years, you know, but I think this is for them to fully understand them before they understand him before they have to say goodbye.
Yeah. And it'll be kind of a symbolic passing of the mantle, I imagine, in some places throughout this island with him and his kids there. It also occurred to me that we've seen William there before.
That's
in those
true.
Moments with William and Roy, but this is the first we're seeing Mia on the island.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we will see also, I'm sure you're looking forward to this, potentially Roy joining them on the island. I think that may, if they are bringing all of Arrow's team around him, that may be one of the others who may join him that we didn't see in the final scene. I'm curious who all else could be there other than Slade, of course.
Yeah, and you have to remember the Prometheus season 2, they all ended up back on the island. I mean, everybody was there when Prometheus tried to blow up the whole island. So yeah. William was there when he was a kid as well. So yeah, they've brought this island back a couple times now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out on Crisis.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe the next episode is just on the island and then they go back to the city in time for the Crisis event and fight. Because, I mean, we've seen the trailers for Crisis and Oliver's running around various city locations and stuff. So I'm thinking this episode will be a one-off for the island and that'll be that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the next episode is called Purgatory, and obviously that's what the island was supposed to represent, so that's likely what we're seeing.
Now, you know what I noticed, though, is in that scene when the kids and Connor walk up to say, hey, where are we? What's going on? Did you notice that the hatch in the ground that leads to the jail cell where Slade was kept was in the background? So I'm wondering if that leads to them going down to guess maybe Slade's there, and he goes and takes him out.
Ooh, interesting. Hmm. I did not notice that.
Just struck me now. I just remembered that.
Well, we have some feedback for this week that goes a little further into some of these discussion points, and I would love to hear what our listeners have to say.
Sounds good to me. All right, we're going to play our feedback in reverse order. We're usually leaving poor Dad L to the very end, but we're going to kick it off with him this week. And he says, hello, Aero Squad. Let's get right to it. Quentin was back. It was another emotional send-off for a critical character. Quentin had one of the biggest story arcs of any supporting character, from his alcoholism, anti-vigilantism, loss of daughters, and to becoming an ally of the Green Arrow. I love any well-written episode where Oliver learns a major lesson. This episode had to happen as there is only one episode left before the Crisis. Oliver had to embrace his Paragon status and rise to save the multiverse. Before this episode, he seemed to be focused on preventing the doom that was coming and stopping Mar Novu, who he perceived as the real threat. Now things are different. Oliver has always found a way. No problem was too tough for him to solve, but this crisis is coming. He must face his destiny and quite possibly his own mortality. David Ramsey directed this episode and produced some spectacular action. I really enjoyed that magnetic multi-bomb arrow that took out four goons with guns. They keep giving us new trick arrows even though the series is coming to an end. My rating in honor of Groundhog Day, 8 out of 10, what if there are no tomorrows? Dad L, Last Father of Krypton. Well written. Well written, Dad L.
What if there are no tomorrows? Yeah. Next, we have a voicemail from Destiny Dazzler.
Hi, Aero Squad. It's Destiny Dazzler. I just got done watching the episode. I really loved it. I loved Oliver and Laurel being stuck in a time loop until they learned what the monitor wanted them to know. I have a theory that the reason Lila's working with him in the first place is to somehow get Sarah back. Maybe that's the thing that he promised her in order to get her to work for him. So it'll be interesting to find out if that's true or not. I'm super interested to find out what actually ends up happening with Oliver, because Oliver's lesson to learn was that he was going to have to die and he couldn't change his fate. But I'm wondering if it's going to work out differently in the end. At least I'm hoping that's the case, because I don't want to watch him die. That would be way too sad. But I'm really, really nervous about it. I haven't been nervous about him actually dying this whole season because I always thought he'd get out of it. But now I'm starting to get really nervous. So I'm excited to see how this all plays out. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Now that is the emotions of a true fan that has been there all along. She is getting worried for Oliver, and I feel you, Dazzler. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, it's easy to kind of get nervous about the unknown. I'm actually more confident after this episode that I will like the ending. So if that's comforting to anybody, there's that.
Interesting. All right, next up is an email for Christy. What does she have to say?
Well, she says that this was one of those odd episodes where I really enjoyed the content of the episode, but not the format. Normally, I'm not a fan of time loop episodes because they're just so repetitive by nature. This episode kept each time through the loop just different enough that it wasn't exhausting. Also, having Laurel caught in the loop with Oliver was a nice twist. The actual plot of the villains bombing the police station wasn't all that important, I guess since none of it was real, but all the fight scenes were fantastic. I love that we're still getting new trick arrows and cool camera angles, even here at the end. Once again, the monitor has me scratching my head. He brings back a dead character and forces Oliver to let that character die again so that Oliver realizes he also has to die. However, since that character was Lance / Paul Blackthorne, I'm more likely to overlook the strange plot. Lance was the last remaining parent / father figure we had in the show, and I really think the show lost something when he died. I'm glad we got to revisit his death, because I thought it was handled poorly when it was lumped in with Oliver being dragged off to prison. I thought every scene with Oliver and Lance was top-notch. I always found Earth 2 Laurel and Lance scenes to be slightly weird, since he's not her actual father, so her goodbye to him wasn't as impactful to me. Also, there was a short scene during the last time through the loop with Oliver and the kids that was just lovely, where he told them they'd be okay. Yeah. That really got to me and almost made me feel like that was the last time he was going to see them. I guess I will begrudgingly give props to the monitor for giving Oliver time with them during his last days. I almost forgot about Lila. I really enjoyed her role in the episode. I can't quite decide if she's a villain yet, since all her terrible actions, like killing Lance, weren't part of reality. I'm looking forward to a real scene between her and Diggle where she has to explain everything. Well, thank you, Christy, and I am absolutely looking forward to that scene as well. I'm really torn about Lila, too, and thank you for sharing the rest of your thoughts. I agreed with all of them, particularly the affinity for Paul Blackthorne as Lance.
Yeah, well, she's got a very strong point about him being the last parental figure that we really had on the show, and the show kind of losing a slight touch with a family feel in that sense, you know, with Oliver having someone that he can look up to, because he ended up becoming the parental figure. So, yeah, we had that for so many seasons, and with Lance dying, we lost that little bit. Now, the only thing I can do to maybe help you feel better, Christy, is try to think about it. Not so much that Oliver has to re-witness people dying again, just so he realizes he has to die. I'm looking at it as this is a monitor rewarding Oliver for his sacrifice. He's allowing Oliver to go back and get to say goodbye properly and more emotionally to the people that meant so much to him in his lifetime. He's giving a chance to say goodbye to them and say whatever words he needed to say that maybe he didn't get to. And that's how I'm looking at it. And that's why the tears are coming, because it allows Oliver to go into whatever yonder realm he's going to with a clean conscience. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well said.
All right, next up is email from Kate Johnson, and she says, "Hey guys, so this episode was a very slow burn. I say that for two reasons. The first being that the fact that it was somewhat slow and repetitive. The other being that right after watching it, I didn't like it. In fact, I almost hated it. I thought it was trying to undo all of the character growth Oliver's gone through, but after thinking about it for a day and a half, I've processed it and I can really appreciate it. 8 out of 10. Before I go into the explanation, I want to point out the surface level pros and cons. The time loop made it slow and almost boring at first. I think some of those duplicate scenes they could have hurried through a bit more like they did later on in the episode. I did love Quentin's return, though. Paul has been one of the better actors of the show, so it was really great to see him again. I also love that he immediately believed Oliver's Groundhog Day and his heartwarming explanation for why he stopped chasing him so long ago. I also thought this was by far the best writing Laurel's had all season. I may have hated the redemption arc for her at first, but as I've come to accept it, I'm happy when the do right when they do right by her character. She did grow to love Quentin, and his sacrifice convinced her to become a hero. So she wanted a chance to thank him and to say goodbye to the man that reminded her so much of her real father. She also had some fantastic quips. Interesting. Your mouth, Felicity's words, cracked me up. My original problem with the episode came while I was watching. When Laurel gets her goodbye with Quentin, I thought they were trying to tell us she had to give up and accept that people will die. And then when Quentin tells Oliver to give in, I still thought they were basically telling Oliver to give up. And as Oliver's force of will is essentially a superpower, he still wants to fight to save everyone. So I was completely missing the point. I thought they wanted Oliver to march into the crisis fully wanting to die. I was worried they were ignoring all of his growth from fighting to die to when he learned to fight to live. Interesting. Well said there. What they were actually doing was preparing the audience. They were telling us through Oliver that he will die in crisis. We need to accept that his death is needed to save everyone. It is his inescapable fate. He has, over the years, found happiness. He has Felicity and their children. He doesn't want to leave. And all season they've been showing us this resistance, but he's not fully trusting the monitor. He thinks that if he can prove that the monitor is evil, Oliver can fight him instead, and there's no way that he'll have to die. But the monitor is now showing him that it is inevitable and that fighting against his fate will only distract him in his fight against the crisis. There is good news, though, presented through Laurel's storyline and the kids' presence in this time. Laurel, this episode, is rewarded for her refusal to betray Oliver. Because she stood by him, she is allowed to fully say goodbye to Quentin. And whether or not you feel she has earned that reward, it hints to something good for us, the fans. If a woman with questionable morals who has been acting as a hero for all of two seconds is gifted with her heart's greatest desire, what will the savior of the freaking universe be gifted with? The monitor has already given him the gift of time with his kids, so once he's dead, I feel like it would be perfectly appropriate to reward him with resurrection and a happy salvation paradise with his wife. However, whatever, whenever that is. This crisis is supposed to show us how Oliver is the paragon, the hero above all others, and as sad as his death will be, it is his complete willingness to sacrifice his life and happiness that puts him above the rest. Think of the other legendary paragons, Jesus, Harry Potter, and what happened to them. Both were resurrected. Don't try to take this away from me. I am convinced now. I can't wait to see what happens next. Kate. Wow, some excellent points to really think about and ponder there, Kate.
Yeah, I love the theory, and I will not try to take it away from you at all, Kate.
No, me neither. She just really put it all together really well. And yeah, that's a point I really want to keep bringing back. We didn't even touch on it, so I'm glad she brought it up, is that Oliver is the paragon. He is the hero above all other heroes, and it is his sacrifice. You have to think about how much he is sacrificing his wife, his kids, getting to be a father, getting to be a family man. He's giving all of that up to save the world. You cannot ask any more from him.
Mm-hmm.
Well said, Kate.
Yep. Well, we have one more episode before the crisis.
Yikes. We do.
I know. Almost at the end. Next week's episode is entitled Purgatory, episode 7 of the last season. Flash, how is that possible?
Well, you know what? The title Purgatory makes sense because he's on Leanne Yu again, which was like a purgatory for him, right? So he's back there again. What's the final lesson that he has to learn? I'm excited to find out. Yes. One more cameo before the crisis. I'm excited for Crisis. Like, really excited. Just the trailers alone are amping me up. It looks out of this world. It's 10 times above what they've done before. So I'm trying to keep my emotions in check because I don't want to expect so much and then be let down. I'm trying to stay neutral, but man, I'm excited. It looks good.
I'm excited as well.
All right, guys. Well, thanks, everybody, for being with us, and thanks for the fantastic feedback, as always. If anything you need about Arrow Squad, just go to arrowsquad.com, you know, or go to the Facebook page. Talk to me and Cammy there. You know, there's not much time left, guys, so get in your thoughts and tell us what you think of where the show's going. 1 week, Cammy. We are back with the last episode before Crisis. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for us, guys. Everyone have a good weekend. This is The Flash signing off.
And this is Cammy. Goodbye.
Arrow Squad is presented by Golden Spiral Media. You can find all our contact info, links, and feedback form at arrowsquad.com. We'd also love to have you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. If you're looking for other great discussions about your favorite TV shows, check out our partner podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com. As always, please share the show, and thanks for listening.